Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Red Couch Theology Podcast. Hey, this week we're talking about fasting. And man alive, I was fascinated by this conversation with Alex about fasting. He makes a really interesting case. If you're not interested in fasting, then this episode is probably not for you, because he makes a compelling case that fasting is a very neglected spiritual practice that has some unique power. So if you don't want to fast, then maybe you shouldn't listen, because he might actually challenge you to do so. I would encourage you to listen. It's super fascinating. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. No intro music.
Oh,
we have
yeah.
audio. I don't know if there's any value to having the intro music.
Maybe. No, maybe. I don't know.
Were you ready?
I never hear the intro music. I was not ready. I was like, I was waiting for you to do more stuff, which is usually what we end up doing.
Yeah, I'm usually unprepared.
And you're doing stuff, and then you say, hey, talk, and I start talking.
So Hey, talk.
Welcome to the Red Couch Theology Podcast, we are recording on a day that we don't record. I don't even know what day it is right now.
It's Monday.
It is Monday.
You actually made me second guess it.
Yeah.
It does not feel like a Monday.
No, I am very confused. I just got back from a trip.
Don't you know you have to preach tomorrow?
No. I find that as I've got older, I find it hard. Like, it takes me a little while when I wake up to remember what day it is. Like, I'll have a moment where I'll be like, what was I doing yesterday? Oh, yeah, this is today. Whereas I felt like when I was a kid, it was instant. And like, I knew exactly what day it is when I woke up.
I've had that issue all my life, actually.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, there we go.
I almost went to school on a Saturday once, so. And I've been known to come into the office on holidays because it's just my routine. And
well,
then,
that makes total sense.
And then I walk in and the office, no, there's no one there.
There's
and
no
I'm
one
like,
here.
What's the date today?
Yes.
Oh, it's Christmas Eve? No. Christmas Day? What? No. That's, not quite that bad.
Not quite that bad. So anyway, it is hard to figure out what we're doing.
Yeah, so we missed this episode because of the snow.
Yeah. Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I lied, actually. Did you know that I lied?
No.
I lied to the World Wide Web.
Because you said that...
I came and I shot this like 30-second video explaining that we weren't streaming because we had no power. And that was a lie. Because then right after I recorded that video, I walked in the building and all the power was on. And I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? It's actually because we had no internet. So my lie was unintentional, but we still don't have any internet. So we're pre-recording this. And then we will publish it later.
It is funny how much you come to rely on having internet. Most of the staff are working from home.
Yeah.
Possibly because they need an internet, possibly just because they wanted to stay at home. I don't even know.
I'm not sure. Either way.
I drove back from the mountains this morning, which was just a delight, as always, to be in the mountains. Bluebird days, just delightful. So here we are, and ready to talk about a subject that is dear to all of our hearts.
Indeed.
And I would say, before we get started on the sermon, I think I've got more flack from kids about taking away donuts.
Oh, that's right. This was the donut day
in the history of church.
Yeah. So if you're not a regular At South in Europe podcast listener that doesn't attend here on the weekends, Alex stole the donuts from the lobby as an illustration of fasting and all this stuff. And yeah, there was no one rushed the stage, but there were probably some children who wanted to, and their parents held them back.
Yes. And I think some parents that felt some sort of like, what's the word? Residual anger, or maybe deferred, or whatever.
There's a few of our members who are probably in crisis counseling.
because
of their kids' reaction.
Yeah, I was away with one delightful kid in our congregation on this trip with our small group. And she said to me at one point, she looked at me and she said, did you eat all the donuts? And I was like, well, no, I didn't eat them. Remember, they were there at the end of the service. And she said, oh, well, good, because if you'd have eaten them all, you would have died. And that would be really sad. So I'm like, my taking away the donuts didn't create so much angst between us that she was no longer
Actually, like, her greatest fear was for your life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was not like she was now in a place where she was like,
she's like more concerned.
She didn't say, I was hoping you ate them all because you would have died and that would be good.
That's funny.
So that was part of the whole, like, let's be experiential with our church experience. Let's try and make random things mean something as opposed to just be random things.
Yeah. And I also will make the observation. You talked about fasting and you used donuts as this illustration as to very viscerally help us experience what it means to say no to something that's a normal routine,
yes,
which is part of the spiritual practice of fasting. So, but it sort of backfired because the donuts after the service disappeared so fast. I don't normally eat donuts on Sunday morning. I craved donuts so hard that day. And then when I finally made it to the lobby, there was none left because they were just like instantaneously massacred by everyone.
Watch what happens when you deny Christians donuts for an hour or so. They have to get their fix.
It'll be the donut conspiracy of 2024.
Absolutely.
It'll go down in history.
So the goal was somewhat of a Pavlov's dog kind of illustration. What happens when you pull into Broadway, into the parking lot, walk into the church building, there's something about you that starts going, ready for a donut.
That's right.
We did make sure there was coffee.
We did, because we're Christians.
Yeah. And in my defense, I had suggested that the kids should get donuts, but they did not get donuts.
Well, they were there, and then no one handed them out.
Yeah. So I said to a couple of parents, look, hey, I did everything I could.
Yeah.
But still, I think people felt like I was to blame. So that's where we started. And I actually wanted to... I actually felt like I was going to have less to say about fasting than the other two of these triad of spiritual disciplines. So I'd kind of kept in reserve this idea of talking about the struggle that we might have with not revealing to other people the things that we're up to.
Yeah.
You know, when it says don't give to the poor, when it talks about praying, when it talks about fasting, the general like tenor of Jesus' instructions are, he gives us a how not to do it and a how to do it. And the implication is almost like, don't show it off to the world.
But
I think for some people that's maybe caused some angst in terms of, well, how do I ask for help with it? How do I grow in it? How do I, you know, I want to talk to someone about my fasting. I want to talk to someone about how much I'm giving. I want to talk to someone about prayer. And am I losing something by sharing those things? You know, I even made that joke about the first week of this about how, after saying don't talk about doing it, now I've talked about doing it.
Yeah.
So I actually think that's actually an unnecessary worry. I actually think Jesus invites us to maturity. He's not trying to make us feel guilty for times we've had those conversations with people, or even times that people have known that we gave something, or known that we were praying, or known that we were fasting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like instantaneously it takes all of the spiritual value away when somehow it comes out.
Yes, that
you gave prayed or fasted.
Yeah.
It's more about a hard issue of like whether you're trying to get praise, whether the only reason you're doing the fast is to get praise, reputation, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and when you're growing in your faith, I think you want to share with people that you're doing those things, and that's pretty normal.
Which was the bike illustration.
That was the bike illustration. Yeah, the idea that
you were boasting about being able to ride a small girl's bike around the sanctuary. You missed a Sunday. No donuts. Our pastor rode a children's bike around the sanctuary while preaching.
Yes,
it was quite a Sunday.
It was an interesting week.
We had a trapeze artist. No,
so to me, I wanted people to catch the idea that, you know, actually, it's very different for a 5-6-year-old girl to wave her hands in the air saying, look at me, I'm riding a bike.
Yeah.
But the day a 40-year-old guy does that, he just has some issues.
so great.
And so perhaps if you've been doing these spiritual disciplines for a while, the invitation towards maturity and to the way of Jesus is to step into leaving behind the days of needing to tell people that you were doing those things, of building self-worth on those actions.
Yeah.
And now to just see that there is a reward there that is invisible or is undetermined. Jesus doesn't really say what the reward is. He just says there is a reward for those things. And we can choose where that reward is taken. So I think that to me is this invitation to maturity that we can step into.
Yeah. And this particular week also, you had one specific staff member on your team who was kind of a punk and kept telling you it's not even about fasting. So you could tell us about that.
Well, absolutely. Somebody who will name, I don't know, Abe Bjorklund.
Whoa.
That's way really too obvious. Specific.
Wow.
Fine. Aaron B.
Rhymes with Baron and last name with starts with a B.
I believe it's pronounced Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah, that person suggested this wasn't about fasting, which I still disagree and I still think it is about fasting. In the same way that the prayer passage is about prayer and the giving passage is about giving.
Well, it's of course it's about fasting, but it's also not about fasting.
Exactly. All three of these are not about the thing that they're talking about
yeah.
to a degree.
So if I can make my case,
go on,
did. You just did. Yeah. Like the thing that you thought you were going to have to go to because you weren't going to have enough to say about fasting is this. There's this movement.
Mm-hmm.
The thesis statement is don't do your righteous acts to be mm-hmm. praised by others.
Yeah.
Three illustrations. Giving. You can give to get the praise of others, or you can give because out of the overflow of your love for God and these sorts of things in the secret place.
Mm-hmm.
You can pray.
Mm-hmm.
You can pray to get praise from other people, or you mm-hmm. can pray because you're encountering your heavenly Father, who's the God of mm-hmm. the universe, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You can fast. And so I was making the case that the primary function of these three was illustrating that original thought, which was practicing righteousness before others.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also clearly about fasting because he mentions fasting right in it. So we kind of sort of half jokingly went back and forth on like, me basically making the case that you emphasize the first portion of it, the illustration
yes.
of
yes.
practicing righteousness.
If we'd have had your way, we would have just had three identical sermons.
Yes.
On the same.
Yep.
Week three on how to practice your acts of righteousness.
Yes. Well, you ended up addressing it and actually I think it was really, really, really helpful.
Yeah.
So
hopefully.
I think you won.
Well, I included Isaiah 58 for you because
I know.
You wanted it included.
So
I just
right when you did it,
token verse.
So Sean and I were in this like triad conversation with Alex in the middle of the week, and I was like, "Man, you look at Isaiah 58. It's about fasting, also.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fasting, but also not about fasting. It's about this tension between doing a spiritual practice to earn praise versus doing a spiritual practice to grow in your spiritual maturity." And Isaiah 58 addresses that very well. I was like, you should check it out. You're like, yeah, maybe I've got some other things that I'm trying to accomplish here.
Mm-hmm.
So like, maybe I'll get to it. And so right when you quoted Isaiah 58, like briefly, Sean looked over at me. He goes,
yeah.
he gave me a big thumbs up. Like, you got your Isaiah 58.
You got it.
And I knew that Alex is like, check. I did a thing. I quieted my little belligerent staff member.
And I actually even just said in the middle of it, it's kind of about the same thing, but it's not also about the same thing.
Okay. Well,
Aaron thinks he's so smart.
Some behind the scenes stuff. It wasn't even me. It was actually Grace Hunter who came up with Isaiah 58.
So well, yeah, and she's very smart. So to me, the slight difference between those two passages is Jesus' teaching is about intentions. It's about, are your intentions to impress humans or impress God?
Yep.
And impress is maybe an uncomfortable word for what you're doing with God, but is your focus on their reaction or God's reaction? With Isaiah 58, it seems like to me the driving influence is, what does it look like to fast when you're ignoring other humans? It's almost like the flip side of it It's like, don't fast and then walk past starving people on the street. Don't fast and then continue to abuse your workers.
Yeah.
It's got that slight twist to it. So one is like...
It's a subtle difference.
So in Jesus, it's like, do these things and pay no attention to humans. That's not the point. And in Isaiah 58, it's like, hey, wait, pay attention to the humans around you. Not in the same way, but don't believe you can just act one way towards humanity and pretend that God is delighted in you taking a day off.
Yeah, but either way, so the common denominator between Isaiah 58 and Matthew 6 is that you're using spiritual practices as a lever, essentially, to try and accomplish your own purposes in the world.
Yes.
Like in Isaiah 58, they're like, yeah, like we're horrible humans, but we fast, so we're good, right? Like thumbs up.
Yes.
We do the spiritual thing, so like we get a pass for being horrible humanity. And God's like, that's not how spiritual practices work. And then in same sort of concept in Matthew 6, they're like, you know, maybe there's people saying, well, I fast because I look awesome. Mm-hmm. And especially in that particular era, in when Jesus came on the scenes, it was a very devout era. They'd come out of like some of those seasons from Isaiah where they were like just doing whatever the heck they wanted. And then their spirituality in Judaism became very devout, very legalistic, and like ratchet down on the rules. And so the new win was to look awesome and look super spiritual. Yeah. But it's still a lever.
It's still
trying to make yourself look good or get God's favor or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And both texts, the bottom line is spiritual practices are a different purpose. They're about encountering God, living his way, growing in his way, actually living out and being a good human, these types of things.
And I think what was helpful for me in realizing how normal this becomes to us is, was for me thinking back to the story I told, I think the first week of the Motivations triad, which was around paying for a house for a weekend for some family.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And sitting there waiting for the moment where they all said, like, oh, well, we need to give you money. No, the moment where they said, we need to give you money, and I got to say, you don't even need to worry about it. And it never came. but believing that would be this moment of, like, great personal satisfaction, if I was honest.
Yeah.
And if that's the reason we're fasting so that we can excitedly have someone say to us, hey, wait, do you fast? Oh, that's amazing. You really are incredible. Yeah. That will be its own reward. There is some actually bizarrely some reward in that.
Yeah. None of these texts, even the text I preached on this week talks about treasures.
Uh-huh.
These texts are not anti-rewards and anti-treasures.
Yeah.
It's the what is the reward and when is the reward and the nature and how you get access to the reward and or treasure. That's the issue that Jesus is trying to accomplish.
And one of the things we realize about this world pretty quickly, I think, as humans, is that some of the things we've looked forward to it for ages and we think will come with a specific reward can end up with a moment of like, okay, yeah. Like whether it's the Broncos winning the Super Bowl or Michigan football winning the national championship or whatever, there's just this, there's this afterglow and then that disappears very quickly.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, well, so what? I didn't do anything. No one's going to remember it or no one's going to associate me with it. And so Jesus invites us to this way of moving the reward to a different place and a different space.
So you did, you addressed this text and you did spend the bulk of your time referring to actual fasting from food.
Yes.
So, but many folks, and I even know a couple folks I talked to, and they're like, oh, I'm going to fast from my phone or I'm going to fast from these other things. So what, remind us that your case for occasional physical food fasting versus some of these other kinds of fasts, you know, I'm going to give up this for Lent or that for Lent or whatever.
Yeah. So I think the tradition of fasting food has been around the physical weakness it creates. So actually, that seems to be somewhat of the interplay in Jesus' time in the wilderness.
Yeah.
He goes without food for a long period of time. He's weak physically, and he relies on spiritual strength that is different. So I think there is a way that I actually think fasting social media is a brilliant thing to do. I think fasting technology is a brilliant thing to do. I think there's so many different things you could fast that are really healthy for you. But if all of those are like, get to the point where you never fast from food, I think you might actually miss out. Because I think there is a sustenance element to food, which probably isn't true of the others. You might feel like you need them, but you don't actually need them.
Yeah.
Whereas food, we all do need that. And so to actually remove it for a set period of time actually does change some of your physiology. Catches your attention in a particular way.
Yeah, it just sits there and nags at you a little bit.
Yeah, it really does. So I think... I don't think when you fast food, you do it because you're recognizing food is bad or actually food has started to have a negative hold on you. I think that the universal experience of humanity is we all need food. Now, some of us eat too much food and some of us eat the wrong food and all those different elements, but that doesn't really come into the conversation around fasting. It's a human need. Everyone needs to eat. And for most of history, everyone's eating every day. That's our usual practice, whether it's two meals or three meals or four meals, whatever it is. We eat every day. It's a regular thing. Some of those other things, they're not needs. They're not historical human behaviors. They're distinctive to our particular time and place. And they can be a crutch and we can need to move away from them. And they can be a prompt to move deeper into a spiritual relationship with God. But actually food is this thing that we come to just rely on for the whole of our lives. And actually stopping and pausing for a moment is actually a real gift and really captures your attention.
Yeah. So you also brought up this quote from Dallas Willard that we both have wrestled with.
Yeah.
So let me set this up a little bit. When I've done physical fasts, I've come to believe that one of the benefits is the weakness.
Uh-huh.
It sort of reveals the dark side of me.
Yeah, the hangry side.
The hangry side, and starts to say, okay, this is like, you just take one tiny little variable out of my human thriving tower and suddenly I'm like a jerk. I'm a little bit more edgy or whatever. And that's a reminder to me of how much I need God. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's one of the benefits of fasting. Well, this Dallas Willard quote, he says, oh, no. Actually, that just means you're not very good at it. Because if you get good at fasting, there's actual physical sustenance. Like he implies there's like a physical sustenance that you can get from the Spirit of God. And I'm like, yep, never felt that. So kind of like runners who like, oh, just run for 6 months and then eventually you'll get addicted to it. I've done that. I've run consistently for months and months and months on end, hoping that I was going to get addicted to working out. Still not addicted to working out.
I actually think in terms of running, there's nothing in the world that I do as badly as running, except perhaps fasting. Like that may be the only thing that I do as badly as I do. Yeah. I get irritable. I find it really easy to try and find, Enneagram 7. I like pleasure. I like fun. I'm trying to find other ways to ignore the feeling of fasting.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to divert my attention anywhere. Whereas the whole point of it is to get your attention.
Yeah. But
I'll try and do almost anything to just pass the time without having to seriously contemplate, recognize that I'm hungry, or really find any focus on God whatsoever. Like I've definitely been someone who I did fasting every week for six years. There were definitely times I was going through the motions of fasting, which isn't the purpose of it.
Yeah, before we started recording, Alex and I were joking, so maybe this will make it feel a little bit more accessible to you if we're a little honest about it, but I was joking with him that how many times have you started fasting and then like at lunchtime you're enjoying a good lunch with a friend and you're like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be fasting.
Oh, well, never mind.
I forgot. I don't know how many times I've broken a fast by accident because eating is such a routine. Yes. It is like it's like breathing in the sense that like you feel hunger, that time of day hits and you're like, okay, what am I going to consume? Mm-hmm. And so it's such a rhythmic thing that it actually takes not only it takes intentionality. You have to be very intentional to say, I'm not going to eat. Mm-hmm. And if you get wrapped up in the rhythms of the day, you might forget.
Yeah.
But then it also just nags at you. Once you get to a certain point and you've missed two meals, suddenly you're like, okay, I feel this. And it's harder to forget at that point because it feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so I think to me, one of the natural, like we talked about this pattern of you're doing something new. Hopefully that new at some point becomes normal to you.
Yeah.
And eventually it becomes natural to you. Now, some of us never get to natural with so many different things. Like English guys never get to natural throwing a football. Like you start too late. Most American guys I've come into never get to natural in kicking a football. Like it's just a real football. Like depending on how much work you put in, you may never get there. But the new phase is almost... it's almost normal to go through those emotions or those thoughts that say, will I ever be able to do this? Is there any point in doing this? Like, am I getting out of this the thing that I'm supposed to get out of it? So I actually think if you step into trying fasting and you say, I'm going to miss a meal or I'm going to miss two meals, there will be times where you say, I'm just hungry and irritable. There's no way I can pray while doing this. God, why am I even doing this?
Yeah.
And there'll be times where you feel like you're trying to force God's attention on you. You're trying to do something to get him to notice you. It will feel very much like a works righteousness thing. And I think all of those emotions and feelings about it, all those thoughts about it are very, very natural in that new phase. I actually think the best prayer that I've prayed during early times of fasting when it was new is simply to say, God, please receive this as a sign of my spiritual hunger for you and a desire that hunger would grow as my physical hunger grows. Just to take that feeling of like what it is to have an empty stomach and say, God, imagine if I had this same sort of feeling. Because when you're fasting, everything looks good. Like food that you would not normally be in. You can walk past a granola bar and be like, that looks amazing right now. Like anything sounds desirable.
Yeah.
But actually to be able to say, God, please help me capture this feeling and please help me get that sense of spiritual hunger. It's the same sort of language or same sort of expression as we read in things like Psalm 42, as the deer pants for the water, my soul pants after you.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we're looking for. We're almost recognizing that our general condition is a lack of spiritual hunger.
Yeah.
And it's a plea to stir it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all great advice. Like, I think that there is this natural expectation that, oh, if I fast, suddenly I'm going to be able to hear the audible voice of God.
Absolutely.
And then maybe eventually, if you get really good at it, that fasting becomes this way that you tune into God's heart a little bit more fully. But initially, you're like, I did that. It was uncomfortable. And I don't feel any more spiritual.
No.
In fact, maybe I feel less spiritual today.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, I remember, I think it was Yvonne or something who said she fasted from coffee for Lent. And she's like, I'm definitely less spiritual than I was at the beginning of Lent. I don't know if it was Yvonne or maybe it was Ryan or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, and like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, but these spiritual practices don't suddenly, they're not about you like feeling a specific way or whatever. It's about tuning into your own weakness as a human being, into your own finality and finitude and all these different things as a human. And if it's doing that, then it's, you know, don't worry. It's working, you know?
Yeah.
So we did get a question.
Yes.
We started to address a little bit, just some tips on some more of the spiritual side of it. But here's the question that came in this week. Can you give us some practical advice on fasting twice a week? I imagine it's not a strict recipe, but any guidance would help get the ball rolling, like sunrise to sunset or water only or things to focus on while fasting and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So we already gave you a few things you can focus on, like this prayer that, like, as my hunger increases, let my hunger for God, for you to increase.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think if you've never fasted before, trying to jump in on fasting twice a week is probably a mistake. I'm guessing this person may have done some fasting just based on some of the language.
Yeah.
But if it happens that you're like, I feel like I should fast twice a week, this isn't about guilt. This is invitation. So don't feel like, oh man, someone mentioned twice a week and it seems like they did that back then. I should be able to do that. I think that's a recipe for doing it for a very short period of time and kind of getting sick of it and stopping. So I actually think a really great rhythm is to try fasting from the evening meal before to the evening meal of one day to the evening meal of the next day.
Yeah.
And even actually having the evening meal that the day before and being with your family, if you have a family, and then taking off breakfast and lunch and then eating the evening meal 24 hours later. I actually think that's a great first cycle for fasting.
Yeah.
It means that you might get to lunchtime and have some definite sense of, oh man, I'm about to throw something at a coworker, or maybe even throw a coworker,
depending
on how strong
level
you are.
Yeah,
but I think that's an easy early step in, and figuring out based on your own personality. I really go back and forth on whether I'm better off fasting on days I'm studying or days I'm in meetings. If I have been eating fairly well in the days before and I've been exercising, most of the time I can go into a day with meetings and feel like it's easy to get through. I just did quote marks for people not watching on video. But I don't know if that's the point. I usually find in those days I don't have much time to pray prayers like the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
And
you're extroverted enough that there's like a different kind of food that you're getting.
Yes.
Meeting interaction.
Yes.
And
yeah. Hmm. So usually when I fast on days where I have lots of meetings, I can get to the end and be like, oh, well, I breezed through that. Whereas fasting on study days, I have so much personal time and so much space away from everyone.
Man.
And that's I'm nowhere so near conversation most of the time.
Which is when you want to eat the most. Uh-huh. You want to just snack all the time when you're studying.
Yeah. So if I fast when I'm at home studying, because I'll at least some of the time do study days at home. If the house is empty, I'll walk through the kitchen and everything just, it's like little voices talking to me all over the house. Like I know where everything's hidden. I know where
leave me alone.
You know, I think I talked about my grazing habits at times, you know, this bag of mini eggs, like the chocolate eggs with the shells that just slowly I've just been grabbing handfuls off. And if those are there on a day I'm fasting, it's miserable.
Mm.
But it does invite me to feel that hunger far more and to turn it into just short prayers. Just to say, oh God, I'm aware of this. Please help me be aware of my hunger for you. Because I think you know physically your stomach is doing something in those moments. It's got an expectation. It's starting to become empty. It's starting to shout, I need something here.
Yeah.
Actually, for most of us, the voice of our spirit is making those same cries all the time.
Yeah.
We just don't have time or space to hear it.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling brave, my recommendation would almost be try and find your least busy day or your most like, you know.
I don't recommend this, actually. That sounds like a horrible idea. But I might not be as practiced as Alex is as fasting.
And again, like my preference is always to try and, yeah, to try and busy it up or to find distraction.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, if you're a someone who has a really intense physical job, it might be hard to fast on a day where you're really physically active. When I used to work on a golf course, I used to walk about 10 miles a day on average.
Wow.
In the winter, especially. And fasting on those days just felt like a non-starter. It just felt like I was too active to be able to enter into that all day.
Yeah.
So finding some days where not a lot of is expected of you on a physical level.
So, honestly, I don't even know how long we've been going because I didn't pay attention.
Do you know
when
what?
We
I
started.
Actually thought that. Yeah, I have no idea.
My hunches were around 45 to 50 minutes right now. So I want to ask another question and maybe we can cover it. And if we go over, we're sorry. We didn't pay attention to the start time. So you actually hinted at another text that you were planning on spending a lot of time in. And you only referenced it in passing. In fact, you told me midweek that you were going to, later in the week, in the beginning of the week, you're like, this is where I'm going. I'm going to spend my whole time over at this other text. And then later in the week, you're like, oh, I think I need to avoid that text because I think if I go there, I'll spend too much time there. You know what I'm talking about?
I know that I said that. I can't remember what the text was.
It's the, this one only comes out by fasting.
Oh, yeah.
And so here's the question. Mm-hmm. You also made this statement that fasting accomplishes things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we just made a case that fasting may not make you feel more spiritual, but it hopefully quickens your hunger for God. So there's a level of fasting that's that. But then you hinted at it. It was a very brief moment in the message where you're like, oh, by the way, dangly carrot for you advanced placement students.
If you feel in college level. Yeah.
If you would like the master's course on fasting, fasting actually has this ability to do something powerfully spiritual in the world that maybe other practices don't.
Yeah.
Can you go into that a little bit for those who...
Yes, I can. The problem being that really...
And do it in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, no, it's actually pretty easy to do it in 5 minutes. That's the problem. Like, because really, my sole evidence for that is, you know, occasionally anecdotal stories that I've seen, but primarily, Jesus says it does. Like, I mean, that's like one of those occasions where you kind of like...
Mic drop.
Jesus sat with some people and said, oh, this kind of thing I just did only happens when you are committed to prayer and fasting.
Yeah, so the disciples are trying to cast out a demon.
Yeah, which again is problematic to a load of people in the West today.
And they can't do it. Yeah. They've been able to do it in a bunch of other scenarios, and this one they can't. And then Jesus deals with it, and then they come to him, they're like, how come you could do it and we couldn't? And
he's given that we've done it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we've had success in other situations. What's up with this one? And he's like, oh, yeah, no worries. It's this one comes out by prayer and fasting. And they're like, okay, curveball.
Yeah. So we should probably start doing that then, because we haven't. I mean, it really, and he gives no other context to it. He just accepts that as true. Now, I think what's fascinating in scripture is that there are all sorts of ways that scripture takes for granted this spiritual world that is actually more real than our world. And we... Even in church, I think many of us that say we follow Jesus would say we feel our world is more real than that world. We're so attached to the physical world. I've quoted before the Babylon Bee article that says, Christian man says, heaven's second best choice if he can't live in America in 2021. because like we're so connected to this world.
Yeah.
And we live longer in it than we ever have historically. And we're
comfort
just
levels are higher than they've ever been.
And, and the Western world, especially with like scientific knowledge and stuff, has at least claimed that it's sort of figured everything out. You know, now all of the stuff we've tapped into at times on this podcast, or like things like quantum theory and neurology and stuff, have really kind of blown a hole in the whole like Darwin solved everything.
Yeah, we're about to finish studying all of science.
Yeah.
And then quantum physics and neuroscience came in. They're like, okay, we don't know a lot.
So suddenly, like, the whole, like, evolution was a magic bullet, which some people outside of the church had really kind of pitched, suddenly became, well, no, there's all this stuff going on that we just can't explain, and it just, it doesn't make sense. So I think this spiritual realm matters a lot more than this physical realm. Or is it at least like the original world, and then there's this physical world that God creates, and the two are attached? But if you've got to a point of saying, like, the physical realm is the real thing and the spiritual realm is kind of like the made up fairy tale world. Yeah. Well, if anything, it's flipped, and certainly they're deeply tied together, and what you do in one can affect what happens in the other one. And so there's all sorts of places that you see this overlap in scripture. You see it with Elisha and his servant, and the servant says, oh my goodness, there's so many enemies around us. We're in trouble. And Elijah essentially says to him something like, go look again, because there's more for us than those that are against us. And he finally sees with spiritual eyes, and he sees, you know, the heavenly armies all around them, outnumbering the enemy. There's the moment where, I think it's Acts chapter 14, or maybe Acts chapter 7. There's these seven sons of Sceva that want to go out casting out demons, and the demon turns around and talks to them and says,
who are you?
Jesus, yeah. I know, yeah. And I know about Paul, but who are you?
Yeah.
And that seems to have a lot of parallels with this story.
Yeah.
That with Jesus and his disciples. Fasting seems to do something in that spiritual realm as well as the physical realm in a way that's somewhat related. And so to me, it's just one of those things that I've just learned to say, yeah, Jesus says it does. And so enter into it. Don't leave it undone because it's uncomfortable. And I do think it has become the spiritual discipline that has been most avoided in this present age.
Yeah. And I know for me, full disclosure, like, it's a spiritual practice that I entered into heavily in seasons and then completely neglect for massive other seasons. And maybe another tip for you is try and consider, and this is actually something I'm doing after you preach this message, like, and I did like 3-day fast, seven day fasts. But then I would do that once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, and like many spiritual disciplines, a consistent rhythm of shorter fasts might actually reap greater harvests. I don't know. I've yet to experiment with that.
Yeah.
I do longer fasts for much less frequently.
Yes.
And after you preached the message, I was like, you know what? I've never tried a weekly practice of fasting before. That's one I've yet to try.
And so that's been my like newest iteration of having said there were seasons where I fasted every week for long periods of time. Months, years in a row, fasting every Tuesday. In this new iteration, I'm fasting every Tuesday and then also the day before preaching, which can have its challenges as well. But it was...
I thought about that this week.
Yeah.
Didn't do it. But
and full disclosure, I had to tie up some sermon stuff the week before and was trying to finish that up having not eaten. And I just got to a point where I was like, this is ridiculous. I just feel like my brain is mush. I can't focus. I'm not in a great space with this. So I just ate because I'm going to leave that to grace. But I feel right now like I can't get my head around all of these ideas to put structure on something.
Yeah.
So I think for me, that works best if I'm in a good place with a sermon outline by Thursday and I can enter into Saturday with like time to pray through the sermon, time to think about it on a spiritual level, but not having to practically and intellectually put it together.
Yeah. The outline is done.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the illustrations are, you know, penciled in.
Yeah. So
that makes sense.
So I think that to me has just been something I felt like I was going to do primarily based on that Matthew passage, which is why I wanted to include it. Because I think it just was me saying, I'm just going to take Jesus at his word.
Yeah.
That it seems like something happens that he maybe even can't fully describe to his followers based on their understanding of things.
Yeah.
But Paul talks about the fact that, you know, he says we don't fight against flesh and blood. We fight against something that's spiritual. And that fasting, according to both Jesus and Paul, seems to do something in those realms.
Yeah, fascinating. So maybe a final reminder for you, if you're out there considering fasting, this is not a legalistic thing.
No.
And it's not a law thing. It's not a you earn something from God thing. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I don't think that your sermon in any way hinted at that. So, but if you're feeling that, that's not the invitation. It's an invitation just like any spiritual practices. We don't earn our salvation. We don't get extra bounty points from heaven where we get to ask for something extra special because we fasted, whatever. It is an invitation to enter into a journey with Jesus to grow in his way with his heart.
Yeah. And don't expect to get to like week three and be like, I'm just flying on this.
I'm a rock star.
Just give it some time.
That's what I was planning on. So yeah.
That's what I got.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And hopefully.
And on Thursday we get to flip and I get to ask all the questions about the thing that you talked about.
Yeah, indeed.
Because I was not there.
That'll be fun. And hopefully we'll have internet again by then. So
that would be grand.
It would be. Because right now the office is strangely empty. Because everyone's off where there's internet. Well,
okay.
Thanks, y'all.
Love you guys.
We will catch y'all later. And now I have to push a different button to stop this.